Esther chapter number 4, if you would please, and deacons and staff, make sure we're going to have our meeting right down here at the front, if you would please, after the service. Appreciate that very much. Esther chapter number 4, as we dive back into our study on Esther. Tonight we're going to look at the idea of courage from the book of Esther. Esther chapter number 4, verses 15 through 17. Then Esther bade them return Mordecai this answer: "Go, gather together all the Jews that are present in Shushan, and fast ye for me, and neither eat nor drink 3 days, night or day. I also and my maidens will fast likewise, and so will I go in unto the king, which is not according to the law. And if I perish, I perish." So Mordecai went his way and did according to all that Esther had commanded him. Can one person really make a difference? Can one person really make a difference? You know, in 1923, one vote gave Adolf Hitler control of the Nazi Party in Germany. One vote gave him control. Edward Hale wrote, "I'm only one, but still I am one. I cannot do everything, but still I can do something. And because I cannot do everything, I will not refuse to do something that I can do." Esther was facing what, from a human standpoint, seemed to be devastating. I don't believe this was just her making things up. I think based upon the fact that she had not been called to the king in 30 days, she had some real legitimate concerns. And I don't know, I'm not trying to add to the Word of God, but I don't know that maybe Esther thought, well, perhaps the king is actually turned sour against the Jews, not just Haman. Maybe the king has done that. And maybe someone has told the king that I'm a Jew, and that's why he's not called me. Anybody ever let your mind wonder about things from time to time, you know? I don't think that's illegitimate that Esther would think that way. Has he heard? And what does he believe? And does he know my nationality? And if so, then when I walk before him, it very well could mean my life. As we look at courage tonight, I want us to see a number of truths from the book of Esther about courage. We won't just look at it from Esther's standpoint, because I think there was courage in a lot of people in this book. I'm not going to tell you how many points. I don't want you to get nervous. And I'm not sure I'm going to get done anyway, so that way you won't be real nervous, right? But I want us to see tonight as we look at this that you must realize that all of us can have courage to do the impossible. So many times people think of courage as it's someone who don't have any fear. They don't fear at all. They just get up and go. The fact is, courage is not the absence of fear. Courage is responding in the face of fear, of what is a legitimate concern, and yet I'm going to do it anyway. And I think we see that laid out for us in the book of Esther. We'll begin in chapter 4 and verse 11. "And all the king's servants and the people of the king's provinces do know that whosoever, whether man or woman, shall come into the king into the inner court who is not called, there is one law of his to put him to death, except such to whom the king shall hold out the golden scepter that he may live. But I have not been called to come into the king these 30 days." Truth number one about courage: courage is not the absence of fear, but action in the face of fear. One person said this: "I learned that courage was not the absence of fear, but the triumph over it. The brave man is not he who does not feel afraid, but he who conquers that fear." Psalms 56 and verse 3, "What time I am afraid, I will trust in thee." So here's Esther faced with this, and she says, you don't understand. If I'm called in there and the king doesn't delight in me and he doesn't hold out that scepter, there's one law. And we know, according to this book and others, that the law of the Medes and Persians could not be changed. This was going to be her plot. But we see verses 13 and 14. Then Mordecai commanded to answer Esther, think not with thyself that thou shalt escape in the king's house more than all the Jews. For if thou altogether holdest thy peace at this time, then shall their enlargement and deliverance arise to the Jews from another place. But thou and thy father's house shall be destroyed. And who knoweth whether thou art come to this kingdom for such a time as this? And then verse 17 we've already read. So Mordecai went his way, did according to all that Esther had commanded him. The second truth about courage is courage sometimes needs the encouragement from others. In other words, we think that courage is something that's just an intestinal fortitude and we're going to do it and go get it, you know. Sometimes people need to be encouraged towards their courage. This is the right thing to do. Go do what God has asked you to do. Winston Churchill said, let us brace ourselves to our duties and so bear ourselves that if the British Empire and its Commonwealth lasts for 1,000 years, men shall still say, this was their finest hour. You could argue that it was Britain's finest hour as they withstood the bombardment day in and day out of World War II. 1 Samuel chapter 23 and verses 16 and 17. And Jonathan's, Saul's son, arose and went to David into the wood and strengthened his hand in God. And he said unto him, fear not, for the hand of Saul my father shall not find thee, and thou shalt be king over Israel, and I shall be next unto thee, and that also my father knoweth. I love Jonathan's courage, don't you? And the courage to encourage David. David, you're doing right. You're doing exactly what God told you to do. My dad knows it. I know it. Everybody else knows it. Keep serving God. An incredible thing this was. And I love the fact that Jonathan could find David and his daddy desperately searching for him, couldn't find him. It's almost as if Jonathan was like, I'm just going to stroll in the woods. Hey, David, how you doing? Like, yeah, my dad's looking for you, but they can't find you. It's amazing how that works, isn't it? Sometimes courage needs the encouragement from others. Number three. We've already read verse 16 as she says, go gather everyone together. The third truth is courage places the emphasis in the right place. Courage places the emphasis in the right place. In other words, biblical courage comes from a right relationship with God. Esther's courage is not necessarily an internal thing where she's just going to pull herself up by the bootstraps, which I don't even know what that means, right? How do you do that anyway? But it's not that. Where is Esther resting her courage in? God. Go fast and pray. This is too important for us just to walk away from it. Joshua chapter 1 and verse 7, only be thou strong and very courageous, that thou mayest observe to do according to all the law which Moses, my servant, commanded thee. Turn not from it to the right hand or to the left, that thou mayest prosper whithersoever thou goest. In other words, we find the courage to do what's right when we know it's rooted in God's Word. One of the things that Brother Jeremiah has repeatedly said to me in our conversations about this trip is, God told us to go. He told us to go. And he keeps pointing back to Scripture, 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 Scripture. That's where courage comes from. We see a fourth truth from this same passage of Scripture, chapter 4 and verse 16. Courage is willing to sacrifice self above others. Matter of fact, that's probably what we most often think of as courage. In other words, we would think of people who win the Medal of Honor as a courageous person. And the truth is, you don't win one of those without putting yourself above others in as far as sacrifice. That happens over and over again. Courage is willing to sacrifice self above others. Esther said, okay, I'm in a great position here. I am probably the best one to talk to the king. If anybody's got a shot, it's me. If I perish, I perish. That's okay. This is too important to go. The fourth truth, courage is willing to sacrifice self above others. I love the story of Jonathan and his armor bearer. We've talked about it a number of times, but it's one of those stories that you just love. And it's important to think about the whole setting that's happening. Israel's cowering in caves, scared to death. Nobody knows what to do. And Jonathan says to his armor bearer, you know, I think we're going to go over that hill over there and we'll just kind of show ourselves. And if the Philistines say, we'll come to you, we'll say, okay, come on, big boys. And if we go to them, either way, don't you, if you read Jonathan's language, it basically means if they come to us, we're going to whoop them. And if we go to them, we're going to whoop them. But let's go find out which one they're going to do. You know, I love it. And what happens? He rots a great victory. I mean, in this small piece of land, they just killing people. And it's so bad that the Philistines start killing themselves. And all Israel rises up, and what a tide turn it is. Courage is willing to sacrifice self above others. The fifth truth. Look at chapter 5, verses 1 and 2. Now it came to pass on the third day that Esther put on her royal apparel, which is a good thing, and stood in the inner court of the king's house over against the king's house, and the king sat upon his royal throne in the royal house over against the gate of the house. You think it was royal or something? Verse 2. And it was so when the king saw Esther the queen standing in the court that she obtained favor in his sight. Good. And the king held out to Esther the golden scepter that was in his hand. So Esther drew near and touched the top of the scepter. The fifth thing is courage requires action. It requires action. In other words, you can't be courageous in a foxhole. You actually need to go do something, right? Esther can't be courageous back in her house. She can think about courageousness. She can pray about being courageous. She can plan to be courageous. But it actually took her going and standing where the king could see her to be courageous. Someone has said, courage is contagious. When brave men take a stand, the spines of others are stiffened. That's true. Think about the three Hebrew children in the fire. Doesn't matter, O king, you can do whatever you want to us. But God, one way or the other, is going to deliver us. And we're not bowing down. Get mad, heat it up, do whatever you want. It's okay. We're not bowing down. What did it do for the rest of the people around them? Is this not a fourth man and he's like the Son of God? Your God is so great, anybody who doesn't worship you is going to make everybody else's house as dunghills. Like, man, he went from one extreme to another, didn't he? And it's like, wow. Courage. Number six truth. Verse 4 of chapter 5. And Esther answered, if it seem good unto the king, let the king and Haman come this day unto the banquet that I have prepared for him. The sixth truth is courage is prepared to give an answer. Imagine if Esther walked in there and the king said, Esther, it's so good to see you. I'm sorry I hadn't called you in these last 30 days. What can I do for you? Up to half the kingdom. What is it? Actually, I don't know. I didn't expect it to make it this far. I really thought I'd be dead about this point. So can you give me a little bit of time to think about that? You know? No, she needed to have something in place, right? She needed to be prepared to give an answer. Courage has a plan of attack. This is what we're going to do. Well, what about that obstacle? I can't worry about that obstacle. This is what God has asked me to do. I'm going to go. I'm going to have a banquet ready for him. And this is what's going to happen. Don't you love David in 1 Samuel chapter 17? Then said David to the Philistine, thou comest to me with a sword and with a spear and with a shield. But I come to thee in the name of the Lord of hosts, the God of the armies of Israel, whom thou hast defied. This day will the Lord deliver thee into mine hand, and I will smite thee and take thine head from thee. David's a little specific here, isn't he? I mean, he's not just saying, I'm going to whoop you. He's going to tell him exactly what's going to happen. That's because Goliath wouldn't know all this when he comes down to it. And I will give the carcasses of the host of the Philistines this day into the fowls of the air and to the wild beasts of the wilderness, that all the earth may know that there's a God in Israel. Boy, I love it. You ready to give an answer, right? David said, actually, you're coming to me with all this physical stuff. I'm coming to you, and the God that you've said couldn't do anything about you, that's who I'm coming to. Before the end of the day, you and all your armies are going to be eaten by birds and beasts. Okay. By the way, at the end of the day, he and all his armies were eaten by the birds and the beast, right? You got to love that. Courage is prepared to give an answer. The seventh truth. Boy, this one we don't like at all. So the king comes to Esther, right? Esther at the banquet of wine, what is thy petition? It should be granted thee. Verse 6 and verse 7. Then answered Esther and said, my petition, my request is this. If I have found favor in the sight of the king, and if it please the king to grant my petition and to perform my request, let the king and Haman come to the banquet that I shall prepare for them, and I will do tomorrow as the king has said. Wait a minute. You've gone through all this trouble, and you've made this banquet of wine, and you've got the king there, and you've got Haman there, and all this kind of stuff, and you're going to say to them, come back tomorrow, and I'll tell you what I want. Like, really? Number seven truth I think we can see from this text. Courage is patient. Courage is patient. How many of us love to be patient? It's like something we don't like to do, right? I'll be a patient if I can have it today. Right? Now, don't miss this, okay? Don't miss this at all. What if Esther had asked the king the day before? Do you know what had been missing out of the story? The king not being able to sleep, him reading the Chronicles and figuring out who Mordecai was, Haman coming, Haman parading him around the city, all of that would have been gone. God knew exactly what was happening. Esther was patient. If you had an audience with the king and you had an opportunity to save your people from death, don't you think you'd take it? Sometimes courage is patient. Psalms 27 and verse 14, wait on the Lord. Be of good courage, and he shall strengthen thy heart. Wait, I say, O Lord. Not fun to wait. Those of you that have been in Emmanuel for some time may remember this, but I preached a message here a number of years ago on waiting. Anybody remember how I started the message? Okay, some of you do. When it was time for me to preach, I just sat on the platform as if nothing was happening for 1 minute. That's it. It was just 1 minute. You could feel the tension in the audience and the shuffling and all kinds of stuff. I did the same thing at Ben Salem Baptist Church in Pennsylvania, actually. And I said to Brother Love was there at the time. And I said, hey, do you mind illustrations and stuff? He said, no, I love them. I said, well, here's what I'm thinking about doing. He goes, great. So he introduced me, and of course, I'm a guest speaker. That's a little bit different, right, than my own people, right? And so I started my stopwatch as soon as he said, so Brother Ogle, you come and preach. I just hit my stopwatch and just sat there. And I mean, about 15 or 20 seconds in, you could hear the rustling, like, what's going on? You actually hear whispering in the crowd. One guy about 35, 40 seconds in say, doesn't he know it's his turn? It was hard for me to keep a straight face, right? And if you remember here and there, I did the same thing. I got up and said, it's hard to wait, isn't it? You got the point. It's hard to wait, but courage is patient. Chapter 7, verses 3 through 6. Chapter 7, verses 3 through 6. So we're now at the second banquet. Esther's got it all prepared. Now comes the real deal. Because now she's going to expose the king's vice president, if you will. Second in command in the whole kingdom. And he's going to be sitting there. You talking about courage. I mean, honestly, I would have thought about telling the king privately, right? No. She's going to look Haman in the eyes when she says it. Verse 3. Then Esther the queen answered and said, I have found favor in thy sight, O king, and if it please the king, let my life be given me at my petition and my people at my request. 4. We are sold, I and my people, to be destroyed, to be slain, to perish. But if we had been sold for bondmen and bondwomen, I had held my tongue, although the enemy could not countervail the king's damage. Now, I wonder at what point in this Haman figures out what's going on. I don't know. Then the king Ahasuerus answered and said unto Esther the queen, who is he and where is he that does presume in his heart to do so? In other words, how dare he? And where is he? That's not good for the guy sitting next to you, is it? And Esther said, the adversary and enemy is this wicked Haman. And Haman was afraid before the king and the queen. It's a good thing to be. It's one of the last things you're going to do, right? Number eight truth is courage is truthful. It's truthful. It had to say, this is what's happening. I and my people are bondage. In other words, what Esther was saying is, the people that Haman wants to kill, the Jews, I'm one of them. I'm a Jew. Amazing. I've told you some of this story before, but the, was it the 1936 Olympics, I believe it was held in Berlin, Germany. I think it's the 1936 Olympics. An American rowing team from Washington was in that contest. And the Germans did everything they could to whoop the Americans. It's a fascinating story. There's actually a video on you can see of the final boat race where these men win the tournament. What's interesting is the boy who was the what they call the controller, the coxswain, basically, he's the guy who tells the row, 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 row. He is the key to the whole boat. Got a letter before they sailed from New York saying, by the way, I'd like for you to look up some of your family members in Germany. You're Jewish. He did not know. When Hitler's representatives placed the wreath on the neck of the American boy, because only one wreath was placed, it was placed on a Jewish boy. Pretty significant in what was happening already with that. Courage is truthful. Nehemiah chapter 2, verses 2 and 3. It says, wherefore the king said unto me, why is thy countenance sad, seeing thou art not sick? This is nothing else but sorrow of heart. Then I was very sore afraid, and I said unto the king, let the king live forever. Why should not my countenance be sad when the city, the place of my father's sepulcher, lieth waste, and the gates thereof are consumed with fire? Nehemiah, what's wrong? What's wrong? I have a burden to fix my city, king. Don't you love the rest of the story? What do you need? How long will you be gone? Need any money? Great stuff. Chapter 8, verses 1 and 2. Our ninth truth on courage. So what's transpired now between the beginning here, the banquet, the king leaves in his anger. He comes back in. Haman has fallen down on a couch-like thing to beg for his life. It appears from the king's vantage point that he's actually trying to force himself on the queen, which doesn't help his cause any. And it's interesting that the chamberlains, the people, the servants that are there around, cover Haman's head immediately and immediately offer an alternative. Oh, by the way, he's building a gallows out back, and it's actually for Mordecai, you know, the guy who saved your life. Would you like us to hang him on it? I mean, that's what happens. By the way, it tells us what kind of leader Haman was, doesn't it? That the people he was leading wants to kill him immediately. That's their first option. Could we take him out and hang him today? It wasn't literally a hanging. They impaled him, but that's a little more gross than hanging. But anyway, you get the point. Maybe you don't get the picture, but all of that is taking place, okay? Now the king says, okay, now what? Verse 1 of chapter 8. On that day did the king Ahasuerus give the house of Haman, the Jews' enemy, unto Esther the queen. And Mordecai came before the queen, for Esther had told what he was unto her. Okay, so now the king's putting all kinds of dots together, right? And the king took off his ring, which he had taken from Haman, and gave it unto Mordecai. And Esther set Mordecai over the house of Haman. The ninth truth is courage recognizes others. Courage recognizes others. In other words, Esther talked about Mordecai. King, can I tell you who he is to me? I don't know what all she told him, but I can imagine, based upon the rest of the story, hey, King, can I tell you, I wouldn't even be in this position if it wasn't for him. He actually reared me. He was like a dad to me, and he's the one that put me in this pool, and he's the one that told me about this, and he's the one that's been checking up on me. And by the way, King, you already know that he's the one that saved your life. He's an incredible guy. I'd like to introduce you to him. King says, you know, why don't you not only introduce him to him, but I think I'll give him the ring that Haman had. sometimes we read over these little facts and miss their significance. Do you know what that means? Currently, this is the ruling nation of the world. They cover most of the world. They have a wealth of riches. All of this at the disposal of Mordecai now. He's got the ring. Whatever's sealed happens. He's got full on authority. Pretty amazing. Read some of the Apostle Paul's letters. You know what the Apostle Paul is constantly doing? Pointing to others. You read Romans 16 lately? Do you know what basically the whole chapter is about? Other people. Other people. The end of Colossians, other people. The end of Philemon, other people. He's just constantly pointing to other people. Courage recognizes others. The tenth truth, chapter 8 and verse 3. And Esther spake yet again before the king, and fell down at his feet, and besought him with tears to put away the mischief of Haman the Agite, and his device that he had devised against the Jews. Then the king held out the golden scepter toward Esther. So Esther arose and stood before the king. So you get the idea. Esther comes again before him without being requested to be there. Golden scepter handed out again. Another act of courage. And said, if it please the king, if I have found favor in his sight, and the things seem right before the king, and I be pleasing in his eyes, let it be written to reverse the letters devised by Haman the son of Hammedatha, the Agite, which he wrote to destroy the Jews which are in all the king's provinces. For how can I endure to see the evil that shall come upon my people? Or how can I endure to see the destruction of my kindred? Look at chapter 9 in verse 13. Chapter 9 and verse 13. Then said Esther, if it please the king, let it be granted to the Jews which are at Shushan to do tomorrow, also according unto this day's decrees, and let Haman's 10 sons be hanged upon the gallows. The tenth truth is courage doesn't stop short. In other words, courage finishes the job. It wasn't sufficient for Esther to save the palace, though that was going to be part of what she did. It wasn't sufficient just to get rid of Haman and to exalt Mordecai, though that happened as well. Esther was concerned about Jews that, quite frankly, she had probably never met before. By the thousands of them, scattered in provinces all over the world. But she says, I can't stand to think about my people being slaughtered. She doesn't stop short. In 2 Kings chapter number 13, we don't have time to look at the whole story, but it's an interesting story. Verses 18 and 19, and he said, take the arrows, and he took them, and he said unto the king of Israel, smite upon the ground. And he smote thrice and stayed. And the man of God was wroth with him and said, thou shouldest have smitten five or six times. Thou wouldest have smitten the Syrians, not Syria, till thou hast consumed it, whereas now thou shalt smite Syria but thrice. In other words, he said, why'd you stop at three? Why don't you do a good job of it? That's basically what he's saying. Courage doesn't stop short. Chapter 9. Almost done. Chapter 9. In verse 29 through 32. I love this part of the story. Chapter 9, verse 29. Then Esther the queen, the daughter of Abihail, and Mordecai the Jew, wrote with all authority to confirm this second letter of Purim. And he sent the letters unto all the Jews to the 127 provinces of the king of Ahasuerus with words of peace and truth to confirm these days of Purim in their times appointed according as Mordecai the Jew and Esther the queen enjoined them. And as they had decreed for themselves and for their seeds the matters of the fastings and their cry, and the decree of Esther confirmed these matters of Purim, and it was written in the book. Number 11, courage ensures future generations understand the sacrifice. Courage ensures future generations understand the sacrifice. In other words, Esther said, not only do I want this system set up, this celebration set up, but I want it pinned, I want it preserved so that everybody knows exactly what took place and why we celebrate this. It's one of the reasons why history is so important. That we know what's happened in the past that we study history, not rewrite it, right? That we figure out why someone made the statement that they did and what was the context of it and all that. That requires us to be smart, to read, not just news organizations and stuff like that, right? In Joshua chapter 4, verses 5 through 7, what does Joshua have the people do? One of each of the 12 tribes, they go back to the river they've just come across, and they get a stone. And they bring the stone out, and they build a monument, a memorial. And why? Because Joshua says, I want this pile of rocks not just to be a pile of rocks, but I want your kids to come by here and go, what is that? And you tell them what God did. You tell them what God did. You tell them why those men sacrificed and what God did to separate that river and how he whipped Jericho and all of these things, because learning from that is important, not only for history's sake, but for future generations. That they understand what a God we serve. That's why it's important not only for our children to be in the Bible, but to be in books. Not just historical books, but missionaries' stories and men of the past to see what God did. Courage ensures that future generations understand the sacrifice. Impactful events involved courage on many levels. Many times we want to make an impact, but we're not willing to be courageous. We think about men who were courageous. We think about them, some of the things that they went through. It took courage to do those things. We're grateful that we live in a free country today. But have you looked at what some of these men went through to ensure that we live in a free country today? When you look at the founding fathers, that they pledged their lives and their fortunes and their sacred honor, they did. They did. As you look over the list of these 11 truths, where are your struggles? Where does courage struggle in your own life? All of us, at some point or another, allow fear to grip us. We've got to be careful that we don't allow it to dominate us. That we say, hey, this is right to do. This is right to do. I was thinking today, I've been in ministry now close to 30 years. And we were walking streets today, and I consciously thought, you know, I'm just uncomfortable doing this. That's just the truth of the matter. To me, it's uncomfortable to knock on a total stranger's door and figure out what you're going to say when they open the door and share with them the gospel and leave a track and a VBS flyer or whatever. And God and I were having this conversation. He wins those, by the way. At least he's supposed to, right? It's right to do. That's why we do it. It doesn't mean that all of a sudden someone doesn't have the fear of knocking on a door or whatever. That's why we do it, because it's right to do. That's what courage really is. So let's look just quickly. We got only about 2 minutes or so. But let's look quickly. What is, in your opinion, what is the most difficult part of courage? What's the most difficult part of courage? Brother Richard? Okay. Getting started. I thought the first step, right? It's that's like, oh boy, you know. So good. Someone else. Hannah? Okay, so obeying, not in your own way, but exactly what God tells us to do. Good. Yes. Okay, rejection. So if I do this courageous thing, what's going to happen? I'm going to be rejected about it, and now what? So, Brother John? Okay, so accepting the outcome that the Lord has. And sometimes that is perceived as negative. Yep, Brother Bob? Okay, good, good. Hope? Okay, so the unknown. Not really. Okay, what's going to happen with this? Good. Sarah? Yes. Okay, so the patience to just keep doing that. Good. Do you always know ahead of time that an event needs courage? Okay, some of you are shaking your head no. All right. I don't think you do. There are some events that you know needs courage, doesn't it? I mean, it's pretty courageous to climb in a boat and land on an island with people shooting at you. You pretty much know that that's going to take some courage. Either that or you're more scared of staying on the ship with the drill instructor than you are getting off of it. I'm not sure which one, right? But either way, it's like, okay, that takes courage. But sometimes events come in our lives immediately that takes courage to respond to, and we didn't know we were going to need courage for that particular event. That's why we have to beg God to give us that courage day in and day out. Okay, one last quick question and we got to go. What's the difference between courage and foolishness? Rebecca? Okay, so the process of planning versus rushing. Okay, Brother Bob, do you have your hand up? No? Brother John? Right. Okay. Right, so biblical courage is based on what God tells me, which is Esther's courage was that way. Yeah, great. Oh. Okay. Okay. Good. Courage is basically knowing what's coming and doing it anyway versus I'm just kind of blindly walking into this thing, if you will. Joan? Okay. Okay, good. So sometimes something seems foolish from the outside viewpoint, but it's exactly what God's told them to do, and that's a good thing. So, Sarah? Okay, good. So courage would be prayed for before, during, and after, and get a clarity, a confirmation from God, whereas foolishness would be more and more muddled, if you will. Brother Jim, last one. I'm sorry, John, I'll get you. Okay. Okay, so foolishness would be reacting in emotion. Good point. John? Oh. Good. Okay, so foolishness is based on pride. Great thoughts here. We forget sometimes, or we don't think through the fact how courageous Esther really had to be in this whole situation. And when you throw in, I didn't even talk about this earlier tonight, and I know we got to go, but when you throw in the fact that she was a woman in a male-dominated society where she really didn't have much say at all, that really brings this whole situation to light. So pretty amazing stuff. So good. Praise the Lord. All right, you're dismissed. Deacon staff, don't forget we need to talk right up here for a few minutes.